but it was hardly isolated. The vitamin deficiency of pellagra, which is a niacin deficiency, this is something that niacin's a B-class vitamin. Niacin's found in green vegetables, not so much in corn, at least not natively. Niacin deficiencies lead to rough skin or splotches on the skin, thus the name pellagra, which is Italian for rough skin, and eventually dementia and death and all of the nervous system problems. Now, pellagra spread wherever corn-based diets spread, originally showing up, well, in various parts of Europe, but let's particularly note in Italy in the late 1800s, where corn became the basis of the diet and where it was becoming a substitute for the green vegetables that contained niacin. No one knew about niacin at the time. But immediately, and this was at the time in the 1880s, where the first microbes had been isolated as the cause of infectious disease. And so every scientist wanted to find bacteria that caused pellagra. And every lab was coming up with bacteria. The craze was spreading everywhere. One Louis Sambon in England on a pellagra commission actually decided that pellagra was airborne or insect-borne. In fact, he came up with a very fanciful hypothesis of how mosquitoes would pick it up from somebody and carry it to animals, and another mosquito would bite the animal, and maybe the house fly or the stable fly would pick it up and finally spread it to another human. So you had to take extra precautions to prevent yourself from catching pellagra. And again, the reasoning was the same. It seems to break out in clusters and this kind of thing. The connection to corn was sometimes noticed, so it was assumed, of course, by these microbe hunters, not that it was nutritional, but that there was a bacterium in the corn. And so they simply couldn't let go of microbes. Everyone was racing to be able to be the first to develop the treatment, the prevention, the vaccine, get the Nobel Prize, make the money. And, of course, the public was scared to death of germs. You can't see germs. They're very tiny. So it was a very scary idea. The epidemic of pellagra hit the United States beginning in 1905. By the 1910s, it had reached a level of over 200,000 Americans cumulatively, which was as large as the AIDS epidemic was only about 4 years ago. So, in fact, this was a major and devastating epidemic in the United States, mostly in the southern United States, amongst populations that ate cornbread and molasses as the mainstay of their diets. This, of course, was fairly niacin deficient. So in certain groups, in certain clusters of people living primarily in the South, we began to see pellagra. Two national commissions on pellagra were formed. A whole battery of scientific researchers sent by the federal government to find out what was going on. Every one of them looked for germs, one after another after another. Some were more honest and would try to inject the germs in animals to see. Of course, they were isolating plenty of germs from pellagra patients, but would inject them into monkeys or other animals to see if they could cause pellagra in the animals. When nothing happened, they were honest enough to say, I'm not sure we've got the right germ. Other labs were far less scrupulous and said, this is the right germ, and another one say this one. The treatment for pellagra was, of course, mercury and arsenic and strychnine as the leading antibiotics of the day. And quarantine was a very common procedure for prevention. So, in fact, in sanitaria and in various asylums and hospitals around the country, pellagra patients were isolated and kept quarantined so as not to be able to infect the rest of the population. The New York Times was at the leading edge of this campaign at the time. They pushed the idea that this was infectious, and if we don't do something to prevent infection, including by stable flies or house flies or insects, airborne transmission, then we were all going to be doomed. So the New York Times was beating the drum saying we've got to do something to control the pellagra germs and find what that germ is. Now finally, in the midst of all this absolute insanity, came one Dr. Joseph Goldberger from the Public Health Service of the United States. He was cut from a different cloth. He didn't go along with the bureaucracy that had hired him. And in fact, he was only promoted because his predecessors had all resigned finally in absolute frustration that they couldn't definitively find the germ that caused pellagra. He showed up, and it took him all of maybe a few weeks at the absolute maximum to realize what caused pellagra. All he did was he went into the hospitals, or the quarantine facilities, where the patients and the healthcare workers were, and he noticed the difference in the diets immediately. The patients were eating cornbread and molasses, and the healthcare workers were eating normal diets, and the healthcare workers, and here's lesson number three for this lecture, is in no case did any healthcare worker contract pellagra from any of the patients. Now, you see, healthcare workers are on the front line of disease. They're treating patients. There are some 5 million healthcare workers in the United States today dealing with hundreds of millions of patients. They are at the front line of disease. If there's something infectious out there, be it flu or herpes or hepatitis, they are the first to get it. They absolutely get it more than anybody else. And any disease that does not transmit from the patients to the healthcare workers is absolutely guaranteed not to be infectious. Dr. Goldberger realized this, and when he saw there was no transmission to the healthcare workers who were changing these people's clothes and feeding them and taking care of them and everything else, he knew this was not infectious. He looked at the diet, realized the difference in diet, spent several months playing around with the diets until he figured out which foods were rich in whatever substance it was that was missing. He didn't know the name, didn't know what it was, but he knew which foods could cure and prevent pellagra and which ones didn't. He went through this whole thing and actually experimented on the patients, both prisoners in the prisons and also patients in the hospitals, and had a perfect success rate in terms of curing and preventing pellagra. Well, you would think that this would have earned him a Nobel Prize. The problem is that one's career in science is subject to one's peers, and his peers were not happy with this because he was blowing away their entire war against microbes, searching for the germs. So, in fact, the medical establishment began attacking him. The Thompson-McFadden Medical Commission was established specifically to discredit Dr. Goldberger, to mock him and to attack him. The New York Times called him pernicious and irresponsible because if Americans listened to Dr. Goldberger's advice, why, they wouldn't take precautions to protect themselves from flies, and they'd think that just by eating food they could somehow save themselves from the deadly pellagra epidemic. So Dr. Goldberger was going to be responsible for millions of dead people. In the meantime, the national conferences on pellagra, too, were held. One actually at one point condemned Dr. Goldberger. Finally, some of the scientists retracted that, but the pressure was getting very hot and very heavy. In frustration, Dr. Goldberger, his wife, and 14 co-workers finally decided to prove once and for all this is not an infectious disease. They took the bodily fluids of a number of pellagra patients and injected themselves with it. Now, they may have caught some diseases at that time, but one disease they did not catch was pellagra. Now, you would think that would have settled it. No, that didn't stop. The news media and the medical establishment, the U.S. government, continued to wage their campaign against Dr. Goldberger all the way to his death in the 1920s. It was not until several years after his death, niacin was finally isolated and crystallized and proven to be the absolute cure and prevention for pellagra. So Dr. Goldberger was vindicated after his death, but the microbe hunters, of course, had issued no apologies. They just swept it under the rug.